All right, we are back. CH9 Live, we're at Visual Studio 2012 launch in beautiful purple Seattle. And now we're going native. So we just were with the managed designer, architect guy, Mads Turgesson, who's great. Now we have Jerry Higgins from the C++ team.
Great to see you again, Charles.
Nice to see you too. Now, Jerry is, you run a test team.
That's right, yep.
And a lot of what you do is focused around C++ AMP, async, with PPL and
That's
stuff
right.
like that. Why yep. don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, so I'm actually run the test team for C++ AMP, and then more recently I'll be taking on the whole C++ organization for a test team.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you. Thanks
nice.
A lot. Yeah. And this last time I've been working a lot on doing like creating workloads and things that use AMP. You know, of course, making sure all the quality is up where it needs to be, using the some of the new asynchronous stuff that we've done in C++ that you probably I'm sure you're aware of.
Yes.
And that's been really special. I mean, last in Dev 10 we introduced the task parallel models, which really is a great abstraction when you compare it to like actually going straight to threads.
Okay.
Because it kind of gives you, and I think Mads actually really did a good job of hitting on a lot of that, right? Where
yeah.
If you're bound to threads, you're going to hit these synchronization issues where you're blocking and things. Where this asynchronous stuff is really sweet because you fire off that async workload, and with PPL, what you do is you fire off a task, and then you can actually when you dereference that task or refer back to it, you're not doing any kind of blocking at that point. It's
okay.
Unlike something like futures, where futures bound to threads, and so with a future, you might fire off a future, but then when you go back to actually refer back and do reference that work, when you dereference, you're going to actually block on that thread.
Ah.
And so that is, if you want to keep responsive UI, I think that's a spot that Mads hit really well, is
Absolutely.
Let's keep that UI snappy and you know, keep things going.
Totally.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, in the Windows Store app model on the top of WinRT, C++ is a first class citizen.
That's right. That's right.
And you're doing everything asynchronously, so you're going to be using PPL.
Yep.
Because you guys don't have the async await language feature. But who knows? You know, maybe Herb and company will think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I'm sure we're thinking about it for sure. Yeah.
Sure. Now, let's talk about C++ AMP, because I think C++ AMP is one of those technologies that are, man, it's really cool. I can write C++ inside of a Lambda that's essentially a kernel for GPU.
Exactly, yep.
Wow. But it's also sort of, you know, what does that mean?
So one thing to think about here is that, you know, if you've got, say you've got an 8-core box under your desk, like a lot of us have maybe a 4-core that's hyper-threaded or something, right? So you got a fair number of cores to work with. In contrast, let's take a look at the graphics cards, right? Mm. So if you look at a high-end graphics card, you're talking in some cases of, you know, between 1,024, maybe 2,000 cores. Mm. And these things are extremely good at crunching numbers and doing data parallel work. Mm. And so the specific areas where this kind of comes into play are like linear algebra, things that underlying is like differential equations.
Okay.
One example of that we don't think about this as being differential equations, but if you look at all that image processing, like blurs and things like that, this stuff really lights up. It's also used in like quantitative analysis for like Monte Carlo simulations, where you're trying to sweep like a huge parameter space using you know, quasi or pseudo random numbers.
Okay.
And then there's a whole bunch of spaces we don't know about yet, which, to
be
honest, is the most exciting to me.
Right on.
Like, where are people going to find ways to use this technology and take advantage of both the massive data parallelism, but also, especially on the current generations of discrete cards, these things have a phenomenal amount of bandwidth, somewhere around 200 gigabytes per second, roughly.
Really?
Yeah. It's amazing. And now, to achieve that is, if you had to like hand code that all yourself, would be kind of tough.
Sure.
But by taking advantage of DirectX that we have, we're able to actually JIT that code to run on. So we're actually agnostic to the hardware as long as it's DirectX 11 compatible hardware and it has the drivers, and we just run.
Okay.
And so, one of the things that can be a little bit tricky is like we're used to thinking in terms of like a small number of threads a lot of times, and this way what you think about is a larger set of parallel activities that you're running, and so we have that very high bandwidth, but what comes with that is because these they're basically arithmetic logic units are a lot simpler than a CPU. They don't have a deep execution pipeline that does, you know, predicting which branches you're taking and all that kind of thing. and one of the other things is the latency is high. So it's kind of like the analogy of, you know, you got a big ass truck that's driving slow.
Yeah.
It's going to have a high latency. It's going to deliver a lot of stuff. Whereas you got a race car, it's not going to deliver much stuff, but it can get there back and forth quickly.
Yes.
But what you do in GPU programming like this is you hide the latency by oversubscribing on purpose. And the reason you can do that is on CPU-based systems, context switching is relatively expensive. And on these GPUs and these accelerators we're talking about, it's very cheap. Mm. And so you'll see all your threads, they're basically doing SIMD, so single instruction, multiple data. So that's kind of the data parallelism thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're chunking along and you hit a request for some memory that you have to, now this is where the latency comes in. That can get swapped out, it does get swapped out, and other guys come back in and just start running. And that guy's getting, his service in the meantime is being, the request is being serviced, mm-hmm. comes back and it's ready to go. And so you hide that latency by basically bringing these other guys in, letting them run. They might hit, they're going to hit that same memory request. It's just a different set that you're talking about here. Mm-hmm. And then the other guy gets cached back in.
Excellent. Yeah. Now you've opened up GPGPU, which is general purpose programming on the GPU.
That's right.
I do kind of wonder, you know, thank goodness for Al, because Al is here asking questions and we appreciate that, Al. But I do want to ask real quickly, you know, how general purpose is GPGPU?
Great question. Now, yeah. So some of the things, let me talk about some of the things we don't do well in GPUs in general, right? Some of the things we don't do well is if you have divergence in your code. So if you're not, it doesn't necessarily, not just a branch, but if the, part of the branch is taken and parts, the other branch is taken by the other threads, mm-hmm. this is where GPUs don't shine. Because generally what happens is the execution gets masked off the cores that are no longer, that are taking one branch while the other ones make forward progress, and then vice versa. And so you can imagine that you're going to make much slower progress in these kind of scenarios. And so code that's inherently branchy doesn't work very well there. You can do recursion, really. I mean, you can kind of simulate recursion by doing like template recursion unrolling and mm-hmm. things like that. But you just can't do like regular recursion and things like that. Okay. There are some other things. And the other thing is if you have a very small number of things to do, GPU not so great, because you know we are talking about you got to go across right now. Well, there's actually two situations. There's the discrete cards where you actually are going across the PCI Express bus. But one of the coolest things that's coming up now is these systems on a chip, right? And so in these cases, you've already got the memory where you want it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that you can actually start executing that. And so that some of that overhead will be reduced. So in the a lot of the guys that do GPG programming, you try to kind of minimize those copies and things like that. But that problem is going to change a little bit as we get more and more devices, like the tablets coming up, phones, different things, as this DirectX 11 stuff flows down into these kinds of devices.
Excellent. I think that's one of the areas that general purpose developers, GPD, would need to kind of understand better in some sense, now that we've opened up this world to them, especially for C++ people, that hey, you know, you can stick in the language that you're used to. Lambdas aren't that big of a deal. They shouldn't scare you at this point.
That's right.
And that's a kernel as far as we're concerned in GPU world, and take advantage of all these things waiting to do work.
Yeah.
But understand what kind of work you can do.
That's
understand
right.
What workloads make sense. And of course, data parallelism is obvious, but you have to get the data from CPU memory to GPU memory. And people In some cases.
Yeah.
So people will, it's basically a new world.
It is. Now, I think that a lot of these things are going to be enabled through libraries. I mean, just like a lot of the kind of nascent technologies we have, mm-hmm. you know, you start out with the library writers who kind of bring this home. And we are working on a couple of fronts to try to do some open source work, mm-hmm. you know, for like linear algebra. Not everybody needs to write matrix multiply. Mm-hmm. You know, we need an implementation there. And areas like, you know, like things like image processing will be fantastic. One of my favorite things that I have yet to see like really exploited well that'll be interesting is things like feature vector extraction. So if you're trying to reason about like say a set of photographs where there's similarities, you've probably seen some things like that's done in the past.
Uh-huh.
Can we extract features using data parallelism? Mm-hmm. And then can we take that and get back to our kind of connected world and go up into the cloud and match those features with something? If you think about an application, something like a Shazam, this is kind of a ripe thing as well. Mm. Another one that I didn't mention is things like Fourier transforms, okay. which is used in several different kinds of things like audio processing and things like that. Mm-hmm. That's very fast on a GPU as well. So there's a lot of different areas, and I think it's, like I said before, one of the things though is I'm really looking forward to somebody doing something that we did not expect with this technology, where they know something that it can run in this kind of lockstep way, and then you know really exploit this technology.
Awesome. Yeah. So remember, we're live. We have questions. Please ask. We're here with the great Jerry Higgins, and we're talking C++, C++ AMP, and C++ whatever. So let's go to the C++ whatever part.
Yeah, well, let's talk about XAML a little bit.
Yes.
So Mads and I worked together before. I actually was the test lead for the compiler team for C# way back.
Cool.
And one of the things after that gig that I learned was WPF. Mm. And it was one of the first times that I've seen a UI technology that, because I'm more of a runtime guy, right? Mm. But it was the first time that I'd seen a UI technology that I really was kind of jazzed about, the way you do this declarative XAML stuff, you know, and talk about behaviors and these things like that, kick up data mining and stuff. And I really kind of lamented that we didn't have that in C++. Mm. You know, you go back to programming C++, and I'm pretty much back to console apps and things, right, to some extent. But during this last Visual Studio launch that we're doing, this last product cycle, I had an opportunity to code some of this WinRT stuff. Mm-hmm. And so between the PPL stuff that we were talking about a few minutes ago, where we've got this async stuff working really well, the XAML stuff is fantastic. And one of the really cool things is, if you happen to be a DirectX programmer, you know DirectX, you can actually get at the drawing surface with DirectX as well.
Yes.
And so we've really, and that's another thing that, now this is not what I didn't work myself on, a lot of this DirectX debugging that we've enabled too, so that mm-hmm. we've brought the Pix debugger into the Visual Studio, fantastic. We brought in Digit, which is a project that we did where we can do things with pixel shaders. We can do things with real pixel, HLSL pixel shaders, with also reasoning about textures.
Awesome.
It's really fantastic. I mean, it's really kind of a much more complete story than we've had. Mm-hmm. Some of this stuff is V1, so we've gotten some of it done, and we expect to kind of keep on and finish more of it next time. But I did a little bit of playing around where I did get back to the drawing surface and of the XAML control. Mm-hmm. And it's not just full screen. You can actually do things where you've got this drawing surface, and you can actually do, like we used AMP, for example, to do cartoonizing or image processing of live video streams.
Nice.
And using like other ways of doing that, you would see this, you'd have to either bump back the quality that you wanted to do on it, like using the CPU, or you'd have to basically accept like a very slow frame rate. And so one of the demos that I showed earlier this year is a tablet that we had that was a system on a chip, so a single chip with both GPU cores on it and CPU die, CPU cores. And if you did use the CPU cores, you would see it, and it would be like a snapshot, wait, snapshot, wait. Mm-hmm. We flip it over to using AMP, and all of a sudden, it's real time. You know, you're doing this, and it's moving with you. And
awesome.
I mean, this kind of stuff is going to be the magic sauce, I think, for this should allow developers to do some really, really interesting stuff, I think.
Absolutely, and that's the whole, I mean, that's what we hope people will understand with the power of C++ AMP and this modern world. I do want to talk a little bit more about C++ AMP and, you know, the new Windows Store app development model. I'm just going to call it WinRT, because that way
sure.
I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
I guarantee you'd be right.
I'll know what you're talking about.
So WinRT, in the WinRT world, essentially, you know, I can see a world where you have a DirectX app. So talk to me, I guess I'm going to kind of put two pieces together. So DirectX and C++ AMP working together.
Yeah.
Right? So you have your pixel shaders and the kind of stuff you do with DirectX, which of course is all GPU based. But then you can blast on some data in C++ AMP in the same app. So use those two together and throw them on a XAML surface. I want to see that.
Absolutely. So generally the way we interact with the XAML controls is through textures and surface, right?
Yep.
And so what you can do is you can actually bring you've either already brought your data, or you bring your data, and maybe it's before display. Now, in this case that I was talking about, we're actually intercepting a webcam stream, right?
Sure.
And so we're taking that webcam stream, we're processing it with C++ AMP to basically just do image processing, and then we're drawing it using DirectX, using the interop that we have. And it's pretty slick. Yeah.
Excellent.
And I think in the future, this will get better and better, because one of the things you can do that's really cool is you can actually put your data over on the GPU. So, you know, there is a little bit of cost to getting that data over there. And then you shoot a kernel over there. It's one of those things where we're more used to this in cluster computing, where we talk about move your computation to where your data is. People
yes.
are somewhat used to that.
Yeah.
So for GPU, that's the game. I mean, what you do is you put that data over there, you fire a kernel, you fire another kernel, you fire another kernel, mm-hmm. you tell DX to present it mm-hmm. Without bringing all that data back. It's really, really cool way to go.
Excellent.
Yeah. So and the other thing that is really important about this, and actually, I think this is one of the most important things,
okay.
is our architect, our technical fellow, David Callahan, I love this quote from him, mm-hmm. is that power is the new performance. If you look at tablets and phones especially, laptops to some extent, getting better power models on these things is very, very important. And since these GPUs are frankly kind of dumb ALUs, basically they're just arithmetic logic units for the most part, mm-hmm. I mean, their scheduling goes on top of that, but they do consume and so a significant amount less power a lot of times than the CPU cores will, mm-hmm. because of the amount of transistors that are put into cache and things on the CPU cores. But the other thing is, if they finish the work faster, which they do as well, then you can imagine that we're going to get considerably better power consumption out of these things.
Absolutely. I mean, it all comes down to the amount of electrons that are required to finish computation, right?
That's right. That's right.
And batteries don't really grow in electron concentration unless you plug them in.
Yep.
And they're recharging, right?
Yeah, that's
right. Recharging.
That's right.
So, but again, the thing for me is, if that's true. And most applications in the real world are going to be hybrid, in the sense that they're going to be part GPU, part CPU.
Yep.
So you're still going to be using the CPU for things that you have to use the CPU for.
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Then the GPU. Yeah. So it's helping developers understand when to use a GPU for one part of your app or at the same time. You can have the CPU and the GPU running at the same time, crunching on the same app. That's obvious.
That's exactly
it already
right.
does that.
Absolutely.
So we got to really train people when, you know, and for C++ developers especially, they're the ones that are going to be doing this. Train them to understand when to go GPU, because I think that's still kind of
that's
young.
That's right. This is a challenge for us, right?
Yeah.
We actually, one of the things I suggest people do is take a big look at our blog.
Okay.
So we actually have a ton of samples and things on our blog, mm-hmm. where we're using the GPU in this case. Now one of the things, like what you're talking about, when you talk about like when to use each one, mm-hmm. it can actually change a little bit. So in some cases, there are certain type of transformations that maybe that data copy thing maybe dominates, because mm-hmm. it's a really short computation, right? And so you'd then think, well, of course you do that on CPU. Mm-hmm. Well, it could turn out also that now that if you're doing this on a tablet that's unplugged and has parked some of its CPU cores, now again, it might be way faster to do it on a CPU or on a GPU cores. And so that's the other big thing, is you need to think as a developer about what's your scenario, what's your audience you're trying to go after here, mm-hmm. and build, measure, learn, just like we talk about so often, right?
Absolutely.
And kind of really see how it works. Because that app I was talking about, when I ran it on my laptop, my desktop, it mm-hmm. had very different performance characteristics in some cases. It still ran fast both cases, mm-hmm. but it didn't get quite the, you know, over speed that I got when I ran it back on the tablet. So it's kind of interesting.
All right. Well, hey, we got a question
from
Kel. And this is it's an excellent question. Herb Sutter sort of alluded to this in some talks, but C++, AMP, and Azure in the future.
This is absolutely something that we're looking at. I mean, if you think about, like one of the things I was talking about a few minutes ago is this kind of feature extraction and feature matching in the cloud. This is probably going to be a case that's going to be very interesting, you know, for Azure scenarios. Mm. The other thing is, if you look at a lot of the big data, right? A lot of times big data, when you end up out on a node at some point, you know, this thing's been, if it's MapReduce or whatever it is out there, the things that will support in SQL Azure as well, and as these other things, is you end up getting these things out there. Now, once you hit on the compute node, why not be using GPU cores? Now, it does depend on what the hardware inside Azure looks like, right? And so currently, we don't have a way that's not virtualized yet. So the GPU is not purely virtualized. And so if you're using VMs and things like that, that's kind of some enabling technology that we need. And so, you know, definitely the company is thinking hard about that and, you know, where the right place is to hit that. And the key for us is that one of the beautiful things about C++ AMP is If it supports DirectX 11 compute, we work. And so that means that on these servers inside Azure, once that's there, we will just work. And we'll of course test it and make sure that all the driver stack and everything is all, that hits expectations and performance and all those kinds of things. But currently now, if you look at the supercomputers in the world, like the top supercomputers, there are several that use GPUs in their supercomputer story. And so
I'm sure
of clusters of machines with GPU. And so this is definitely a very important scenario. Staying in your the language of choice that you have, and it also brings up not just C++ AMP in the cloud, but as a C++ language team, how do we address the cloud in general ourselves? And so we're also thinking about that a lot, and not just thinking about it, working towards that and incubating and things to make that a lot more of a tenable thing that you can do.
Sure.
Because now that's way overly complicated. Programming everything with purely with MPI or things like that, it's very hard to do all that message passing.
Well, there are computation services in the cloud. I mean, there's Green Button is an example of, sort of a media processing service, and they're using native code up there. Yeah. But I think a key point there is you mentioned, when you think about cloud computing, it uses a lot of energy. It has the potential to be
you're hitting on
kind
another
of an
thing
expensive
that's
thing, right?
Yep,
so if you have this notion of cloud GPU, where you say shoot a kernel, I would shoot a kernel up to somewhere in the cloud where the GPU compute is right near to a gigantic blob of data.
You got it. That's important.
Right?
Yep. That's right.
What I'm doing
that's
then from
the
client
sure.
is shooting up kernels.
Yep.
So popcorn.
Well,
call it popcorn.
From the client? Well, kind of.
I'm just kidding. I'm just.
Well, certainly shooting up like maybe some reduced data. I mean, one of the things we want to do is not be using the network for constantly and saturated with a bunch of redundant data and things,
of
right?
Course.
And so I mean, one of the things there's always this push pull argument about like, oh, you don't need a rich client on the phone. I've heard this for years. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, then why are our clients getting richer? Because there's a certain amount of computation you want to do at that head.
Yes.
You don't want to be shipping all that data up, And so that kind of marriage of being able to do the reduction there and then take advantage of that massive resource that you have in the cloud is really, really enabling. But you are right. I think the idea of, you have these machines in Azure that are close to some federated data source or things like that. You fire your computation in there, and potentially you use less energy if they happen to be on machines that are maybe APUs and things like that. Or if you want the other way where you want just like monstrous power, maybe they're discrete cards and things like that that have this sick bandwidth that you can get out of those.
Sure. Yeah. So I guess it could be my confusion. So in GPU parlance.
Yeah.
What I was thinking in terms of a kernel was that it's basically a kernel is just a function, or it's basically it's code that has to execute on data. It's not the data, right?
That's right.
So
well, that's right. I mean, there's data structures
correct?
Associated, but it's
sure.
basically correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you have to. Generally, you have in your kernel, you have data structures and their representation, your types, and all that kind of stuff, right?
Sure.
So in that sense, but when we talk about a kernel, we're really talking about the computation.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that goes, one of the great things about C++ 11 is this Lambda feature, which I'm sure people are aware of out there.
Yep.
And it's great to see that being used in such a creative and important way.
Yeah, and one of the things I really appreciated with the design that we came up with is that we didn't make a whole bunch of language changes for this. We made two language changes. One was a restriction modifier, which goes in the place where just after where CV qualifiers go, that say, check and make sure this kernel can run on a GPU, right? Because there's some really bad anti-patterns, like referring back to global memory on the CPU side is just, you're doing parallel programming, shared state is not your best friend, right? It's in fact probably a pretty big enemy anyway.
Yes.
And so one of the things that's kind of nice, but one of the things that I think is understated with GPU programming or accelerator programming, data parallel programming, is that by the nature of it, there are certain types of race conditions and deadlock conditions that you don't have because it's such a huge anti-pattern and such a huge performance thing that it's just not stuff you do. Mm-hmm. And we even, in a lot of cases, you can't do it in our kernels.
Okay.
And some of that will, maybe some of that will loosen up over time. Who knows? Maybe we'll have stacks on GPUs at some point.
Now, right now in the restrict keyword, You can say like D3D or D2D or like
no, what it is, AMP right now. So AMP. We have right now we have AMP and CPU.
Okay.
CPU is the default kind of implied. Oh, so if you don't have it, it runs on the CPU. But where it's interesting because one thing that I wasn't expecting and when I so generally it's like no, I want this to make sure I can run it in with AMP. So you put AMP in there.
Okay.
One thing that was really interesting is an example is like say you're doing you're taking LUV data. So you've got the plane for color, and then you've got your lumina bits, right? Mm. Lumina bits for things. But you want to move that to RGB. That actually works pretty well on a GPU. You can actually, spew that out there. Mm-hmm. But one thing that's kind of cool that you can do is the function that does the actual conversion of a pixel, right? You can actually decorate that with, say, restrict CPU, AMP. And that way, whether you do it on the CPU or an AMP, the code is done, gets generated for you either way, and you can call that from either context. Now, under the covers, we are, of course, generating two different things there that are functionally equivalent, but from your understanding and the way you're approaching your program model, it doesn't feel that way. It feels like you wrote one function and you put the restriction modifiers on there.
Excellent.
So for helper stuff, it's really neat. I mean, it's really handy.
Now, but let's talk about the restrict keyword just a little more, because it is a language addition. It's C++ AMP is an extension of the language, right?
Well, the restriction's right now the restriction modifier is only used for AMP, but there's theoretically it could be used for other things like pure, for example, like does this function have any side effects?
Great.
And there could be other things that maybe more or less domain specific and things like that.
That's sort of what I was getting at was the possible future of that.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons when Herb Sutter was working on this and working on this design and things with our team, that's why it was done this way. We could have done it with Deckel spec. In fact, some more incubations, that's exactly what we did. Mm-hmm. But this kind of makes it a thing, and it's early to tell if this will be something that would make it into the standard or if we'd push to make this into the standard eventually or not, right, at this point.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, no, I think it's great for C++ developers to able to program the GPU. Now with the
should we talk about warp? Do you know about warp?
Warp is CPU based.
Yeah, so
talk to us about it.
Here's another thing. This is something that's really cool. Mm. So if you look at the current generation of ARM tablets, right, they don't have DirectX 11 GPU parts in them right now. However, the way that there is an emulator that's actually fast that runs on top of the CPUs that's new for Windows 8. And you can actually run that. So on ARM, that ends up being Neon code, which is their vector instructions. Mm. And on Intel platforms, it's SSE instructions.
Okay.
And so if an AMP kernel lands on a box like this, it runs just fine. And it probably runs just as fast, or even a lot of times faster, than your CPU implementation would. Now, the caveat there is, if I'm the guy that writes the math kernel library for Intel, it's not going to perform like that. I mean, it is, it's not quite to that extent. Mm-hmm. But if you write if you're a solid C++ programmer, you will find that this works well. And the really cool thing is, if this then lands on an ARM tablet that in the future does have DX11 support, it can just use that.
Interesting.
So we're able to manage there is a way that we can manage it shows up as an accelerator. An accelerator is the way we surface the compute resource. And so you have an accelerator on a discrete card. You have an accelerator that represents the GPU cores on a system on a chip. And then, of course, you have the one I just talked about, Warp, where that's another accelerator. And there's also one called REF, which some people who do DX program are familiar with.
Great. Speaking of DX, I mean, just to be clear with out there, based on something you said, I mean, you can still run DirectX on ARM. Let's not be...
That's right.
Not to confuse people.
Yeah, DX11 specifically.
Yeah, we're talking about something.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm glad you clarified
so
that.
So your games will run on ARM. Don't freak out.
That's right.
You've got to compile them for ARM. Yeah, remember, we'll hear from them. But, in the WinRT world, you have sort of a reduced version of DirectX 11, 11.1.
Yeah.
That, there's certain initialization things that are gone, some textures and stuff like that, but mesh anyway. That, if you're a DirectX dev, you're going to have to learn to what worked in the world of desktop isn't exactly the same in WinRT, but it's pretty, DirectX has always been really good about being able to
you know, say, hey, this will work with version 9, 8, yeah. 10. Yeah. Yeah. So back, you know, they made it easier for you to go to version with minor adjustments. You will have to make some in the WinRT world. So we covered C++ AMP. We covered, you know, Warp is interesting for people out there as well.
Yeah.
I think in general, this asynchronous model in the modern world in terms of client applications in Windows 8 running on the modern desktop and on top of WinRT.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me in the sense that it's going to be somewhat foreign to a developer coming in with C++ to have to do so much asynchrony.
Yes, right? It is. So yes, it is. And I wrestled with that myself a little bit when I was doing my demos.
How do you wrap your head around?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that's very cool about the way that we surface the task model stuff is the continuations. And I don't remember, I'm not sure if I said anything about continuations yet, but the thing about continuations is a lot of times, one of the tricky parts about asynchronous work, and Mads alluded to this a little bit earlier, is that the traditional way of doing it is all through callbacks. And so it's very unnatural. You end up writing like part of your code's up here in some function, part of it's here in another function. It doesn't flow. It just feels funky.
Yes.
And the cool thing that I kind of lucked into is when I started writing this app, that's kind of what was there. And so that's what I started out with.
Okay.
And so then I moved my app to the PPL, and it's beautiful because now instead of doing that, you basically have your Lambda that's your task that's running asynchronously, and you do a dot then. And you run some more stuff, dot then, run some more stuff. Or you can also do things where you like fire off your task, your asynchronous task, and then you have like a win any or win all, which waits for that either one of them or all of them to finish. So it's a nice kind of fork, fan out, fork and join.
Mm.
And so it's a much more natural pattern. The one gotcha that got me at least one time, it's one of these things that I think you have to get either bitten by once or learn about, is, and it's kind of obvious when you think about it, is you've got some body of a function that you're writing, and you've written a lambda inside it, and you've done a dot then, you've done a dot then, and then you close all that off, and then you're doing other stuff in that function, say. Well, you got to remember that other stuff you're doing in that function, you can't rely on that asynchronous work being done. Because it's not set up that way. I mean, that by its nature, it's asynchronous. It's running out there, then this stuff runs. So a very simple example that I ran into is simply filling up a collection, right?
Okay.
And so it was one of those things where you're grabbing a device, you're enumerating things, you're filling up a collection asynchronously, and then when that's done, then you can do the next set of the process. But then outside that whole chain, I started referring to that collection. And it's null because that stuff got fired off and then that code ran and it's null. So that's the thing that people have to get their head around. Mm-hmm. To me, it was kind of funny because I'm going like, why is that null? And it's pretty much as soon as I looked at the code, it was like, well, duh. I mean, it was pretty obvious. Okay. But that is a thing that I do expect some people will get bit by. And it's kind of a tough thing to kind of not, I mean, C++ is a language of having a scalpel, right? Not a butter knife. And so there is some of that. But, you know, I think that this model with the continuations is so much cleaner. And we've also surfaced, I don't know if you've seen that, it's kind of cute, but we actually have the algebra for this as well.
Okay.
So you can kind of do like if you had a bunch of tasks, T1, T1, 2, 3, things like that, you can do like T1, and, T2, and, T3. And so basically say, hey, I want to make sure that all these things are done. So you can wait that way. It actually, our dev lead came up with that idea and just kind of said like, just kind of played around. It's like, hey, that's kind of cool.
Nice. Is that Archer or?
It is Archer Expert.
Right
on.
Yeah, he's been very helpful on a project I've been working on.
Yeah, so, excellent. Cool.
So rock and roll, Archer. We're going to wind down here now. Next up, we have the great Tim Heuer. And we're going to finally answer one of Al's questions, maybe. And we're going to talk about modern app development on Windows 8.
Cool.
And please tweet questions to hashtag CH9Live or at CH9Live, since you're doing that as well, but this is the one that also works quite well. And have questions about Windows Store app development with Tim Heuer. And thank you so much, Jerry.
Thank you a lot, Charles. It's great to see you.
Always great to see you, man.
Cool.
Rock and roll.
Right on.